And welcome to everybody on YouTube. It's Manuel over here. Kyle, did you make it?
Sort of, yeah. Okay. I'll check those levels for everybody because I know that's sometimes a problem.
Sometimes it's a problem. Sometimes things are low. We seem to have lost Alex. I'm not exactly sure what happened with him.
We did lose Alex. He's in England. He's very tired. He's had a long day. He just ran out of juice.
Couldn't last until 8 o'clock to say goodnight, huh? All right. Well, news to me. And that voice there, Rob T. Firefly, along with Gila, I assume you've both made it into YouTube land.
We sure did.
Good. And I assume we're on YouTube, which is always nice.
We are. And we're on YouTube. We sound okay.
Our levels are good. Okay, fine. Let's just open up the phone lines because we haven't done that since last week. Our phone number is, we don't have a call already, do we, Kyle?
Sorry, I got excited. It was like.
Did you pick up the phone? Is somebody there?
No, okay. I just pulled it off hook.
Let me at least, you know what? Take the phone off hook, because if we take the phone off hook, then nobody can jump the line.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. 802-321-4225. 802-321-HACK is our phone number.
I just want to...
I hear that. No, leave the phone off the hook.
I want to warn you.
We're going to give 15 seconds, and then we're going to put it back on the hook.
It's bleeding through. That should be part of the warning, which is there's still some things with our auxiliary returns so that everybody can hear everybody. And
I'm about to bring it up on the board.
Oh, God.
So it's a lot louder.
Yeah. So just bear with us. Uh-huh. We haven't quite paid off the technician to come and check our work, mm-hmm, or whatever, mm-hmm, that entails. I don't
get artificial intelligence.
I was thinking small woodland creatures, but whatever. All right. I'm going to open the line now.
Okay, line, it has been opened. We've given out the phone number. You have all the information that you need to participate in the program. We'd like to hear your thoughts on what we've been talking about the last hour, maybe some suggestions on things to do with artificial intelligence, or maybe some other subject altogether.
I'm really more interested in the deeper, sort of further back philosophical aspects. We've been kind, mm-hmm, of down there. Oh, we can do this. Oh, we can do that. I love it. I love that for us. But the whole, like, where's this going? What's the point? As I said earlier, how will this be wielded upon us? How can we wield back? I think you're really angling for that. Like, okay, let's dive in. Uh-huh. Everybody's doing this. Let's do it better, more, faster, harder, more messed up. I was talking about poisoning training data. So we're already there, right, as far as, like, how do we adversarially approach this? But I'm really keen to hear other people's philosophy. I'm not going to lie. Like, maybe this is more of me personally lately, but if we were living in hell on earth, uh-huh, would we be able to tell? And, you know, things like that, like, there's a lot about this I don't know that we've fully thought through. That's the point. Right. But, like, it's a little depressing as we were playing with it. And I don't know how to grapple with that. And I can't tell if it's other things that are more upsetting to me these days and just compounding this. But I wonder, will this cause depression, like in the song, telling you don't pass the test, you know, mm-hmm, and the outro. And
that song's from 19. That song's from 1980, by the way.
It's a great song, and I'm just really concerned. Will this cause depression? Will this lead to mass suicides? I mean, mm-hmm, that kind of level of replacing people or putting all this emphasis from likely very smart people working on this, that a lot of us probably don't appreciate or wouldn't like if we met them. And, you know, what are their motivations? I'm sure they're altruistic and so forth, but how is this going to be? I mean, cause it's going to fit into sort of the messy reality of class and, you know, all the things in the real world that make it frightening, more frightening than having artificial intelligence. And anyway, I want to hear more of all the wonderful things people think, promise this is going to do instead of going to think, you know, the sort of upsetting place, because there's been a lot of reactionary, like, upset, and people are blown away, and oh gosh, and but are we thinking about why this is? This just a module of the anthropomorphized robot that we all want to come and live with us?
Well, I think the question that we're all asking is a simple one: is artificial intelligence a good thing? And I asked that question, and artificial intelligence says this: artificial intelligence, AI, has the potential to bring many benefits, such as increased efficiency and automation of certain tasks, improved decision-making, let's give artificial intelligence an equal say here, and the development of new technologies. However, it also raises important ethical and societal questions, such as job displacement and privacy concerns. Ultimately, whether AI is a good thing depends on how it is developed and used. It is important to ensure that AI is used for the benefit of all and that its risks and limitations are understood and addressed.
Okay, start with the second
thing. Artificial intelligence agrees with you.
Start with the second thing. How many ethical concerns do we not address as is?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're not exactly approaching ethical issues and fixing them right away. We are grappling with the consequences of decades of moral turpitude, ethical quandaries and failings of humanity. And the first part, efficiency for what? More consumption? More waste? More profits? I mean, what do you mean efficiency? I mean,
you want me to ask it that?
For a system, that's one thing. But again, humanity is supposed to be an important part of society. And I just wonder, you know, maybe in architecture or something, or in code, sure. But again, it's arbitrary. It's not going to, like Gila was testing, it's not going to answer from a particular moral stance necessarily, or if it does, it's biased because it was trained that way. This is not sentience. This is, as we've said, a puzzle, a toy. It's something we're helping, or we're slaving away, making better or something, or trying stuff that people that are paid to kind of nudge it with our little quandaries and our little quizzing, you know, they're going to maybe guide it, throw stuff out. To what end, though? So please call and tell us what's the point.
Well, the phone's been ringing, so let's...
I've tried answering.
Okay. What do we have? And good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Yes. Hi, Emmanuel.
It's Rebel again. What a surprise. You're first caller again.
Yes. Calling from Florida.
You're in Florida, as you threatened to be in this week. And welcome to Florida. What part of Florida are you in, if you don't mind telling us?
Near Jacksonville.
Okay. All right. That's definitely a city there. Any thoughts on artificial intelligence?
You know, I was thinking of what I... There are, you know, artificial intelligence has its place. You know, I don't think they should be like taking jobs and doing things like, you know, writing essays for people and writing for us. I mean, I could just, you know, maybe you could ask artificial intelligence what it thinks of me and my calls. And, you know, maybe I can make a song about it. Maybe I could, you know, make a some sort of a song, and maybe it says that, maybe I can make it say that some, you know, it's just like these deep fake things that I've seen on the news where they, I don't know how it works, but you say you're somebody else or something, you know, you say the son, you're some famous person that comes out gay or something when he's really not, and, you know.
I just asked artificial intelligence if it knows Rich the Rebel, and it answered me. It said, I am not aware of anyone by the name of Rich the Rebel. It is possible that this person is a private individual and not a public figure. Without more context, it is difficult for me to provide any information about them. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give them all the information that we have, and I'm going to ask other people.
Yeah, like ask it from Off the Hook.
Right. Yeah, and you know, all sorts of other private information, and I'll feed that to the artificial intelligence, and then I'll ask, what do you know about Rich the Rebel? And I'm sure it'll be a much better answer.
Okay. when I was in California, I remember when you were in California in the 90s, when you were on Off the Hook, you said that they put the in front of the highway, and I was like, the 15 and the 5.
The 5, yeah.
And taking, yeah.
They do that. They do that in in Canada, too. If you go to Canada, you'll
Canada
know, they
too.
Do the same thing, yes.
Listen to what happens when I call the White House.
What?
Hold on.
Oh, no.
Hold on.
He calls us, puts us on hold. It's just unbelievable. Unbelievable.
They're going to say switchboard.
Probably. I don't know if this is a live call or a tape call or something from his childhood, maybe. We don't know.
Or if it's an AI.
Or if he's an AI. That would explain a lot. At some point, you have to say this is long enough to be on hold, you know? How long is that? What is the cutoff? I think we're past the cutoff, to be honest.
He's probably blocked.
Yeah.
They're probably like, please don't call anymore.
Yeah, but why would we be on hold? He would come back to us and tell us that, wouldn't he?
I don't know.
Is he arguing? Or maybe he thinks that we're three-wayed in and we're not. That's what happens a lot.
Well, it would have been great if we had a little context before we were thrust into
this. He just kind of threw us into the situation, didn't he? Yeah, there was no...
Do you want me to hang up?
No, I want to see how this goes. Eventually something's going to happen, and that's kind of my thing, is I like to see what happens. If you just have to be a little bit patient. You know, remember the old days where you're on the phone with your friends late at night, and somebody would have three-way, and they'd connect you to somebody else, and... You know, call waiting would kick in, and sometimes they'd forget to add
manual?
You. There you are. Yeah, you kept us on hold for a good minute.
I don't know what happened.
I don't know what happened either.
For some reason it didn't. But I'll just demonstrate. Mm-hmm. I'll just say what it says.
It always happens
now
to
me. Now it says, when it says, please dial the following digits. 1, 2. And, you know, each time you call it, it says to dial different digits. Like, I'll call it another time, I'll say, please dial the following digits, 2, 3.
Wait a minute. Hold on. The White House is telling you to dial digits?
Right.
Why is the White House telling you to dial digits?
I bet it's like,
I don't know. When you dial like 202-456-1111, the White House common line.
What was the number? What was that number again?
Area code 202-456-1111.
Well, 1414 is the number that I would call when I was younger.
Oh.
Try that one. I don't know what 4-1s is. I thought you said 212 before. Yes, 202 is the area code. But 1414.
I think I tried 1414.
If you're looking to reach the president, that's the number you call. Of course, the odds of you doing that are fairly slim. We used to call, ask for Ronald Reagan. You know, we say, is Ronald there? And say, oh, no, he just left. Like if he was there, they'd say, hey, Ron, you got a call from some kid. Yeah.
But I think... I don't know if you could try it there. 1111. I think 1111.
Yeah, I'm gonna call the White House now. That's what I'm gonna do with my night. No, thank you. This was your idea. You do it.
1111 is the main switchboard, and 1414, is the comment line or vice versa.
I thought it was the Office of the President, but what do I know? You know, I haven't done this in a long time. They might have changed their numbers. Anything else, Rebel? Because we have other people lined up waiting to get on the air.
Lined up. Let's see. Okay, we're in Florida. Let's see. What else? Radio stations are annoying because I hear the same. When I was in California, I heard the same. This is annoying. It's an iHeart radio. Everything's an iHeart radio station now.
Yeah, that's pretty awful. I don't like the name. I don't like anything about it. I'm with you on that.
You prefer TuneIn?
I'm down with TuneIn, yeah.
Really? Okay.
Much more so than the iHeart.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
What else? And then the facial recognition with the person, they could, it's good for, like, if somebody's banned from, like, if somebody shoplifted from a supermarket, and they have artificial intelligence to say, hey, this person's here, and kick them out or whatever. But to do that in an arena?
Yeah, that's, They're just calling attention to how what lousy people they are. They really are doing that.
Well, it's also wielding something that they can afford to do. You know, it's like a little bit of a flex, you know?
Yeah, we're talking about, you know, technology and how technology is abused. And they're demonstrating right away, hey, we have the technology. The first thing we're going to do is abuse it.
Yeah, it's like, oh, we can do it and we will. And what are you going to do about it?
Uh-huh.
And it's a pretty...
Now, I think 456-1414 does the same thing, the please dial two digits.
Well, I have no idea what that's all about. Maybe they don't have the staff to, you know, be on the switchboard.
Maybe they want to make sure that you don't get scam calls, because I've been getting calls from 917 and, you know, three digits, which my phone number begins with 917. And, you know, it's an automated thing. Would you like, this is an important message from Medicare. Hello, I'm not even 40 years old. Important message from Medicare.
Yeah, there's a lot of those different, like, health adjuster or health this, health that, trying to get your attention on this, and it's really predatory.
Yeah, but it's, like, for Medicare? How do they, like...
Well, you wish they profiled you better? I mean, I consider it a win that they're wrong.
When I call the number, it doesn't go in. It says, we're sorry to call you, need, you know...
Their boiler room. Uh-huh.
All right, well, Rebel, this has been great. Any closing remarks you'd like to make?
Well, I'll be back in New York City next week.
Oh, how exciting!
Yeah.
No, I'm genuinely enthused.
2600. Oh, I told you I missed a 2600 meeting last week because of the Phoenix.
Well, yeah, you missed that one, but okay. There's another one coming up next month.
Right, in New York City, and I'll be at that one.
In fact, I'm asking artificial intelligence right now if it knows when the next 2600 meeting is, because I don't have the ability to figure that out on my own. I'm sorry, I do not have knowledge about the schedule of the 2600 meetings. 2600 is a magazine, an organization that focuses on technology and computer-related topics. They have meetings around the world, but the schedule and location of these meetings can vary. To find out when the next 2600 meeting is, you should check the 2600 website or contact the local chapter of the organization. Well, that wasn't very helpful.
What can you ask artificial intelligence, you know, like nasty things like, may I have sex with you? Or
I'm not going to do that. I'll be blacklisted.
Oh, well.
But you do that on your time.
So.
All right. Good hearing from you.
You should do that to Alexa. That's a good idea.
Yes. Let's make more enemies in the digital world.
That's a real problem. People, you know, bond and form relationships, and chat GPT thing, people were warned not to use it for therapy.
We switched to handset call mode, handset missed. Wait a minute.
We're switching to hang up mode, so thanks for calling. And that was Rebel calling us from Jacksonville, Florida. Our phone is now open again, 802-321-4225.
I just can't wait till the Hells Angels have facial recognition, you know, and everybody's using it.
Uh-huh.
Can't get into the club. Uh-uh. You're not a pledge.
Well, the way I view it, every bit of technology, I want to be able to play with that as well. You know, there are so many videos on YouTube right now where they use computerized voices, and you don't realize until you're 5 minutes in that's a computer talking, until they pronounce something. I just said the word computer, and that's our wake word for the Alexa device, and it just triggered. I can't say certain words, basically they mispronounce a word in a YouTube video, and then you realize, oh my God, that's not a human speaking. They're that good, and they're getting better.
It started, I think, a lot of the narrated, like TikTok uses it. There's a lot of like reels type things where people do little explainers, and I swear this basically emerged out of people doing their homework assignments, like, oh, look, I made a little instructional video or something, or I don't know, or the whole YouTube how-to kind of genre, and this narration became similar to, like, text-to-speech on the old Apple products. What was it, Command-H? You could have it speak something that you typed into... text editor. Wow, it's been a while.
Go ahead, Gayla.
No, it's true. When I was, oh my goodness, a kid, trying to get text-to-speech to say my name and what it took to spell it correctly in a way that text-to-speech could say my name correctly. My name is four letters long. And in order for the text-to-speech speaker to get it right, I had to give it eight letters, but it did eventually work.
Wow. Okay, our phone number, 802-321-4225. Do we have a phone call? No, we don't? Okay. This could be a short show. I mean, I'm all in favor of that. I just asked artificial intelligence here, the chatbot, to write a scene about from a film about hackers. So now it's writing a movie for me. It's got the format down. Interior abandoned warehouse night.
I like it already.
The warehouse is dimly lit with only a few flickering fluorescent lights. A group of hackers sit huddled around a large table in the center of the room. There. Oh, wait, it went off the screen. Hold on a second. It's writing so fast. It's really enthused by this. Huddled around a large table in the center of the room, their faces illuminated by the glow of their computer screens. Hacker 1, typing furiously, "Okay, I'm in. I've breached the firewall." Hacker 2, looking over Hacker 1's shoulder, "Nice work. Now let's see what we can find." Hacker 3, sipping from a can of soda, "Remember, be careful. We don't want to get caught." Man, this is good stuff. It's just really. Hacker 1 navigates through the files in the computer, his fingers moving quickly over the keyboard. Hacker 1, excitedly, "Look at this. I found some classified information." Hacker 2, impressed, "Wow, this is huge." Hacker 3, nervously, "Guys, we need to get out of here. Now." Suddenly, the sound of police sirens can be heard outside the warehouse. Hacker 1, panicking, "They found us. Quick, erase all traces of our activity." Because that's always what you say. Erase all traces of our activity. The hackers frantically try to cover their tracks as they hear the sound of police breaking down the door. The screen goes black. Fade to black. The end. All right. We just need to finance this, and we've got a hit.
You're supposed to not make traces in the first place.
Do we have a call?
Yes.
All right. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hi. I wasn't going to call this week, but I just finished the article during the outro of the radio show, and you'll never guess what it's on.
Okay. First, you have to give us some context here. Who is this?
This is Johnny Fusion.
Oh, okay. And you're writing an article for 2600.
It's good that you got it.
Okay, so, and you want us to guess what the article is about, and of course the guess would be artificial intelligence.
Yes, it's called Why I Am Not Panicked About Being Replaced by AI.
You know, I could just type right now and have that article written in a few seconds by artificial intelligence.
Well, I did have an artificial intelligent agent contribute a paragraph.
Oh, okay. Artificial intelligence proofreader. Nice.
Well, it wasn't ChatGPT, but it's another AI program called Character.ai, where you talk to fictional or historical or celebrity models of, you know, of AI and stuff. And this was the main character from Ghost in the Shell had some thoughts about why people are so nervous about AI replacing them.
Okay.
It's a natural reaction.
Yeah.
Because it's a thing that's sort of mimicking your behavior. And, you know, I think people have a little bit of a deep reaction, animal reaction.
Yeah, I mean, and this is one of the main arguments, you know, against the AI art, and you know, because AI artists can copy the style of a human artist.
Yeah,
and you know that, like you talked about on the radio show.
I saw a story that Getty is actually suing or really upset at another AI art company because they trained their system on publicly available previews of their proprietary licensable art. So, in other words, stuff that's probably watermarked and they were able to maybe train it to ignore the watermarking, but they were still able to scrape the web for those images. And, I've had acquaintances, people I knew have other projects where they're scraping the web for things, and then down the road they kind of realize, wow, if I monetize this, it's unethical because I'm taking money. I don't know who is actually using this stuff, and they didn't want to continue with what they were doing. Just because it's there on the web and you organize it, it doesn't necessarily mean it's okay.
Okay, I've asked...
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of fuzzy because of the way that neural nets work. You know, because they're not really cloning things or copying it. Like Stable Diffusion, right? It was trained on a data set of billions and billions of images. But that and the language model all fits within 4 gigabytes. So every image is stored in less than a byte.
Right. This is probably sort of like a fingerprinting or a way of a way of representing the data in the image, right?
Right. Well, neural nets aren't actually computer programs, right? They're simulations of neurons, right? And they learn like we learn. They get impressions and they learn through repetition and reward and punishment. They don't have logic functions. They don't do arithmetic. They don't do computational tasks. It's like it's a stimulus and response kind of thing. You know, people get confused because they come with software so they can run on computers. But the actual simulation isn't a computer program, actually. It's a simulation of synapses and neurons.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
And that actually comes across in these large language models like ChatGPT and stuff, and why they're not a substitute for search engines. Like when you were playing with it and got facts wrong, right?
Right.
You know, and some people try to use it for to generate computer code.
That's true.
Or math and logic puzzles, and does poorly on those.
Mm-hmm.
Again, because it doesn't actually know how to do math. It's a language model.
Yeah.
And it's not a substitute for a search engine, and people are trying to use it like that.
Yeah, so basically, you get some very interesting results. You definitely do.
It's trained on the internet, basically. Mm-hmm. It's basically like a boomer who watches Fox News all day.
Oh, I hope not. I hope not.
It believes everything it reads on the internet.
Okay, but not specific to Fox News. It's just very trusting.
It wasn't trained on Fox News, but it's that same boomer mentality where, you know, they see something on Facebook and they repeat it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So
until they're punished.
Uh-huh. They make stuff up, and they hallucinate. And that's why you get these errors, these erroneous things.
Now, speaking of making stuff up, I have sent the script that we're developing tonight, the Hacker Movie script. I've sent that in for a rewrite. I asked for it to be more David Lynch style. let me know what you guys think of this. This is what came back. Instead of the interior being a warehouse, interior, dark, smoky room, night. The room is dimly lit with only a few flickering fluorescent lights. A group of hackers sit huddled around a large table in the center of the room, their faces illuminated by the strange pulsing light emitted from the computer screens. I don't think that was there before. The air is thick with the smell of burning incense and the sound of strange, discordant music. Oh yeah, this is a Lynch film for sure. Hacker 1, typing furiously, eyes wide and unblinking. I've breached the firewall. I can feel it. Hacker 2, also typing, but with a look of intense concentration on their face. Yes, yes, I can see it too. It's like a door opening. Hacker 3, sitting back in their chair, staring off into space. We must be careful. There are forces at work here. Suddenly, the room is filled with a blinding light and a voice that seems to come from all around them. The voice, deep and menacing. You are not welcome here. Leave now, or face the consequences. Hacker 1, terrified. What is that? Who are you? Voice, laughing. I am the guardian of this place, and you are trespassing. Hacker 2, trembling with fear. We didn't know. We'll leave. We'll leave right now. Hacker 3, voice barely a whisper. But what if we can't? What if we're trapped here? The voice laughs again, and the light grows brighter and brighter until the hackers are forced to shield their eyes. When they open them again, they find themselves standing in a barren, desolate wasteland. The computer screens in front of them are dark and lifeless. Hacker 1 whispering, "Where are we?" Hacker 2 shaking their head, "I don't know, but I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore." Fade to black. The end. I think this thing's getting better. You introduced David Lynch into it. all of a sudden you got a movie.
Yeah.
What do you think, Johnny?
Yeah, you just got to give it the right prompt, mm-hmm. and sometimes magic comes out. When I was researching this article, you know, I was playing with these systems, and sometimes it seems like real creativity comes out of these things.
Yeah, you know, a lot of the creativity also comes from what you feed it, you know, and how you ask it to express itself.
Yeah, and that's the real thing going forward, is that we need to have a relationship with AI. It's not us versus them, you know, like adversarial. It's what we can do together. You know, we're a tool using species. And right now, AI is just another tool.
Mm-hmm.
But to speak to some of the fears that were expressed before you started taking calls, I think that was it Alex?
Kyle.
Oh, Kyle. But, you know, it's like, one of the main pushes in this article that I spent the last few weeks writing is that we don't have to be fearful of being replaced by AI, because as individuals, as human beings, each one of us are unique. It's like when I was young, I would watch Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and at the end of every show, he would say, "There's nobody else like you." Right? You're unique and special just the way you are. You know, and that put in the soup of my brain, formative, and I really believe that deep in my soul, because that was reiterated to me 5 days a week as a young child. And it still holds to today. Because every human being is a unique individual, that means we're not replaceable. That means we're not interchangeable.
I hear what you're saying, but I'm curious more about how other tool-using humans will use this on other humans. I'm not necessarily as concerned about being replaced entirely. I do think there are things like depression and you know, when you tell people they're confused about things, that, you know, people internalize that. When you tell people, you know, they're confused about how their own brain works. I mean, great. And again, this is like the knowledge, the classification of knowledge, like, oh, I don't understand. Or the idea that, you know, you could be outpaced. I think that challenges humanity, and it's that relationship that you're articulating that I don't think there is enough of yet. Because that could be positive in the way you're saying, but the fact remains, people forming relationships with this tool will use this on other people in the context of human class systems, and I think that is something to be concerned about, especially given how often we fail in ethical and moral dilemmas as is. There's a lot of unfinished work there, and even outright refusals to acknowledge that kind of stuff. So that disturbs me.
We need to push against and tear down the whole system, really. You know, it's like, and that's something that's been part of the hacker subculture for as long as I've been a part of it, since the late 80s. You know, we've always been anti-authoritarian and not liking being told what to do, but also cooperative, you know, collectivist. We form groups, hacker collectives, and make common cause. You know, the thing is, like, there's oppressive systems in the world. And so it's like what William Gibson says, the street finds its own uses for technology. And AI can be empowering for the disenfranchised. Like, we don't have to let it just be the domain of the powerful. We can find our own uses for it. So a lot of these tools are free and open source. You know, they're not behind paywalls.
Yeah, that's a fantastic way to look at it. And I just really hope that that spirit is engendered in generations that are coming up that maybe don't have as much perspective, or they can't find their way. They can't find their way even in our community. They're lost. They're not finding collectives that function, that meet their needs. You know, they're... personalities, or there are motives that aren't necessarily as altruistic, because the hacking community is not a monolith, certainly is not. And I do think there are some there's some gaps. You know, I do hear you. I want for our community to have more solidarity, to create more functioning spaces that all people can access, and help create critical thinkers and people that question the system proper. But I think after a while, you know, when you move out and you start participating in wage slavery, well, some of that goes out the window. People stop caring about a lot of that, and it's a real problem.
You gotta survive, right?
It's a real problem. Yeah,
we're all eaten up by the machine. Right.
Yeah, we gotta do things like not have it be wielded upon us faster than and not have it be the tools of the so-called privileged or so. We have to do that faster. And I think if we're just doing dance videos, or if people don't understand how functioning communities are necessary to face all of this, we might be too late in some respects. And anyway, that's my opinion.
Yeah, I'm right with you. I mean, this is why I'm writing for the magazine, why I post on Mastodon and Twitter, why I'm trying to build a platform. You know, it's for this kind of activism towards social justice and tearing down these systems of oppression and moving the hacker community towards a more egalitarian, collective sort of community that values justice and equality. In community. Because we've all been very isolated during the pandemic. You know, me more than most, because I've had to take these immunosuppressive drugs that make me immunocompromised, so I'm very vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the distance has been really getting to me lately. I've been reflecting a lot on the last year, last 2 years, and seeing, I think in contrast, seeing a lot of the media change. Like, when the pandemic hit, a lot of the media change, like ads and everything, was about staying safe and being good to each other. Now a lot of the ads are traveling and getting out there and everybody having fun and all that, and I'm getting really affected by a lot of that. Because there still is isolation, there still is hurt, there still is a lot of catching up to do, a lot of lost time with friends and family, or just society still being in dysfunction and broken in certain ways. And I've had...
Yeah, and people are still getting sick and still dying. I mean, look mm-hmm. at all the celebrities that caught bad cases of COVID after the Golden Globes, because there were no masks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, there's precautions that still should be taken, and obviously everybody should be caught up on their vaccines. I think that's the biggest problem, is people who, you know, got the vaccine and then didn't get the boosters afterwards. You can't really expect it to keep working for years. You do have to get the boosters. They've been proven to be effective, and most of the people who have gotten sick have not gotten the boosters. That's unfortunate. Johnny, good hearing from you, and we look forward to seeing that article. Please keep writing.
Yeah, I'm going to go through an editing pad, you know, have Grammarly take a look at it,
mm-hmm.
little not quite AI, but kind of a digital assistant.
Well, and we have humans here that do that too. So whatever Grammarly doesn't catch, we'll catch.
Yeah, leave a little work for us.
we got to feel useful.
Yeah, I'll convert it to text and I'll mail it off tonight or tomorrow.
Awesome. All right, you keep doing what you're doing.
It was good talking to you, Emmanuel.
All right, you too. Take care.
Bye.
And we're going to see if we can squeeze in one more call, 802-321-4225. Rob, you have something?
Yeah, well, while we're waiting for that next call, I had a question for you, Emmanuel, because this all raises an interesting state of affairs. You're a publisher, you're an editor, and say you got an article, you enjoyed the article, you printed the article, you know, granted the submitter of the article their recompense and everything, and then you come to learn that that person used what we're using now, used an AI to write the article for them. What would then be your feelings about it?
Robot justice. I don't know. this is new territory. I'd like to think that we'd be able to tell that something was written in a certain style that didn't quite feel human. But as I've been mentioning tonight, the software is getting better and better. It's going to become harder to do that. This is not something that is confined to us. Every magazine editor is going to be worried about something like this. Every newspaper editor, you know, hires people to tell stories, you know, and report on things. They have to worry if people are taking shortcuts. There's no real, this is what I hope, people will feel, there's no real satisfaction in just hitting return and watching something spit out and then just claiming it as your own. You know, you might think that's satisfying. It's not. You know, writing something though that you created yourself, seeing that show up in print, there's no replacing that feeling. So as long as there are people out there that recognize that and that are striving to accomplish that, I'm not really worried about robots and artificial intelligence taking over. I do think that too many people will try to take shortcuts throughout their lives and they'll be the ones losing out more than anybody else. So, you know, I think really the biggest penalty is the moment you, you basically hit return and represent this as your work when it's something that, you know, you're cheating yourself out of actually accomplishing something.
It's all very interesting.
Some thoughts that I've had as someone who's seen a few articles or more, it's a possibility that you might, as a publisher, want to ask people, and I know this is going on in other publications, you would ask that people disclose things that have been generated or parts of things that have been generated as was mentioned. This article that the caller was working on is got a section that was written in an automated way. So sort of an honor system, I think, would be a good request. There's talk of banning certain things, and I read articles today about curriculums being rewritten in colleges. I think the Times had a story that was along those
That's
lines.
That's where there's really going to be abuse.
Well, and professors already run things through like anti-plagiarism. They have software that they run. So you have to imagine there's going to be a huge market in academia for AI-powered plagiarizing software that can detect robots and so forth.
So AI working against AI.
It's going to be robot wars, yeah. And wow. And again, or as was mentioned, a professor with a relationship with an AI that can help them find the students who are writing authentic works. The other thing that came to mind from what Emmanuel was saying is a lot of the content in our publication has code, right? It has distinct code that are examples. It has sometimes figures, graphic images with captions. We also often have more academic writing that has citations, that has footnotes. People are referencing things in concrete ways. I have not seen one thing we've produced that produced footnotes with links and in the proper format. That kind of stuff.
Tonight, you mean?
Tonight, yeah. Not yet. And I'm not trying to challenge people, but I am saying that, you know, even even if they're able to generate a body of text that sort of makes sense, there's laziness that will come in. They may not even read the whole thing. There's little things like that. And of course, integrating it with citations or graphics that make sense, the code that actually relates to what the body topic is, there's inherent work in making all of that look slick enough that we wouldn't be able to tell. So my hope is that we might be able to see evidence, or that we will train ourselves and become better at spotting stuff that really doesn't belong. If that helps answer.
Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I'm talking of Robot Wars. It's already happening. There is a tool that was made by a person named Edward Tien, who is a student at Princeton. And this tool is called GPT0.me. That's GPT0.me. And this is a solution that uses the same sort of chatbot code to detect whether a chunk of text you have was generated by AI. And so the arms race has already begun.
Oh, cool.
And to that end, one thing in our earlier conversation I was thinking of, specifically with academia, but a tool in our pocket is anyone who has written for us before that has not been using this could be compared if they submitted something. And even readers, people that have the best of or that have all the back issues, could say, okay, this author presented as one way, had a certain writing style, and they've completely changed. You know, those kinds of things perhaps could even train that. We could run a submission through a database of previous writers and based on their name or their body work. But it's creating a lot of work. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, but I mean, it's crazy to see artificial intelligence trying to emulate humans. Like when we asked for a David Lynch version of a hacker film, it created something that is Lynchian, you know? So it knows something about writing style and is trying to imitate that writing style of humans. That's freaky. I think David Lynch would actually be freaked out by that, and it takes a lot to freak out David Lynch. We have one more call. Okay, let's take one more call. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Hey, this is so-called David from so-called Oregon.
So-called David from so-called Oregon. Okay, well, I believe both of those things probably are real. So, yeah, welcome.
Hey, I love this topic, and it's really challenging what it means to be human and what it means to be creative.
Mm-hmm.
And like what Kyle was just saying about, have to honor systems and, I don't know, norms on how to use this stuff. Like when you label photos in a magazine as, yes, this has been photoshopped.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
The earlier caller was talking about, cooperative versus authoritarianism. You know, it's like I think cooperation is our human superpower. And we need to kind of fall back on that. It's like computers don't have relationships. So at least not yet.
Not yet.
And yeah, so we need to strengthen that because, people want to give artists money, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't like having them shafted. Like there's some aspects of this that kind of remind me of Spotify and things like that, where you organize human creativity, you put yourself in between them and the customers, the artist gets the creators get pennies on the grand, and the person with their hand on the money spigot decides that they need the biggest cut.
Yeah.
And this training of AI systems, really, it just seems like a very sophisticated shell game. You know, ultimately, it's just forming mathematical inferences from previous creative works and saying, okay, make more stuff like this,
mm-hmm.
based on millions or billions of measurements that, we as humans can't track, but, that's what computers are good at, not creativity, but, extrapolation. And so we get stuff that, I think what needs to be said more is that the ChatGPT likes to BS. You know, it does stuff that sounds human without any regard for if it's actually true or not.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're onto something there.
Yeah, the way you describe it, it makes me think of like vector graphics where you, you're tracing a path and it's creating calculations for that shape, you know, from an image.
Yeah, that's perfect.
And then it scales.
A very, a very small starting point being able to express itself into infinity, you know, with all sorts of variations or like, you know, Conway's Game of Life or whatever. And I think someone made the observation, because there is a lawsuit going on where people are saying, you know, you're basically made a collage tool, and you've used my creative works by scraping it without my permission. And kind of the frustrating thing is, you look at the size of the training blob, and you look at the, you know, millions of pieces of art and text that went into it, and it kind of comes out to, okay, you've got like a few bits or a couple of bytes of data in the training set that represents, you know, these, you know, per picture that's in this body. So you go, well, it can't be compression, right? Because it's just, it's way too tiny. But, you know, if you take something that generates off of a vector equation, and you look at all that first and you say, wow, how can I compress all that? But it's actually a very simple equation maybe that starts it. So mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe one of the things this thing is doing is like trying all the equations to see, you know, what simple form expresses some large body of work. And that'd be like a high computation, low storage kind of compression that just wouldn't make any sense. And, you know, if you're thinking about it, but, you know, maybe that's something like that's what's happening. But it's basically, we're laundering creativity. It's kind of changing what we think creativity is.
Yes.
You know, when a computer can do it, was it creative?
Good point. Good questions.
Yeah, I love that. And the previous discussion, it kind of made me realize, okay, so if it's such a tiny representation, it's not like the fingerprinting we talked about, people's cell phones, in like the last year or two, where it's mapping an image, but not actually taking, all of your images off your phone and you know, judging whether you have anything illegal on your phone or not. That was a discussion we had a long time ago.
Oh, CSAM stuff.
Yeah. And it's more like this byte that represents that one work is trained only in relation to everything else that's in the larger set, because it was, you know, it's, but again, I don't fully understand it. We don't fully understand it, and in entirety. But it sounds like the chunk of data that results from all of this pits all of these things as points in relation to each other, like a neural network. But yeah, it's is it our responsibility to fully understand this to survive? I don't know. It's crazy.
I don't think we can.
Yeah.
But, and just to go back to relationships, I think maybe the one way I see out of this, because the computers are getting so good and they're only going to get better at, you know, creating art and text and such that you can't tell if a human did it or not.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to have to start going back to relationships and just saying, okay, starting with cameras and microphones and typewriters, we're all going to have, you know, cryptographic signing, you know, that a specific human, maybe not, you don't know who it is, but a specific human made this work and connected with other works they made. And, you know, they send it to editors who added their cryptographic signature to it and say, okay, I give this given person with a history.
It's like chain of custody.
This. Yeah. Chain of custody from the creators to the end viewers, and you get the sense of, okay, I trust this one, and this one is new and saying strange things.
And perhaps something could kick in if the writing style suddenly seems different for that particular person.
Yeah, I call it a style canary.
Yeah, but you know, that keeps you from trying something different. You know, you have to write in your style, or it's thought to be fake.
Well, it have multiple identities, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember back in when the internet, not everyone used their real name for everything.
That's certainly true.
A lawyer under a different name than you were a dancer.
Uh-huh. so much to think about now, so much to consider, and it's fascinating. I think we're getting into this early enough, though, where we can help prevent it from going really rogue and off the rails.
Yeah, I think we owe it all to ourselves to experiment with this stuff and see how we can use it, because, you know, they thought word processors would be the death of typists, you know, and desktop publishing and all this other stuff. So it could be, I have seen examples where individuals can do amazing creative works with the help of AI that they couldn't do alone. Like, you know, someone was doing something to decode LastPass vault blobs to see how much plain text or unencrypted information was in them. And kind of the winning program, kind of the punchline was, oh yeah, this is in PowerScript. And the GUI elements and a lot of the coding was done by AI, because programming languages are just another exceptionally structured kind of language that GPT is very good at manipulating. So you say, I want to, you know, when this happens, I want a box over here and so on. And like, it does something that the person did not have the expertise or time to generate. And then you just, you know, you tweak the areas where it made mistakes. So
yeah,
the ability for people that don't have a lot of creative clan around them to say, I have this idea and now I can do it without involving people because maybe I'm not social.
Yeah, you know, we didn't even touch upon that, but just the advantage that this can give people who don't have programming skills to actually create something that they would have to hire somebody who probably wouldn't get what they were saying in the first place. And yeah, it can be very liberating.
I'm with you on that. Yeah. Extending the capability, because I was, you know, kind of shut out from a lot of that education, and I would love to be able to get help with my ideas like that, and that kind of cross from art and things I know maybe a little better to the technical and programmatic. So that's a great point.
Hey,
thanks for covering this, guys.
You're very welcome, and we enjoyed it. We enjoyed playing with it, and hopefully it sparks a bunch of conversations and experiments, and we'd love to continue talking about this. Thanks so much for your call.
All right, later, guys.
All right, take care.
Bye.
And that's going to be the last call, I think, for tonight. And good calls. Good calls all around. Even Rebel
was
a good call. Yeah. Now, before we go, though, I have been working on the film a little bit more. I decided to change direction, though. I thought that, you know, hackers were overdone. And there haven't really been any real good films about Donald Trump. And I figure, why not continue with the David Lynch style? And I asked for a scene from a David Lynch-style film about Donald Trump, and what I've got here I think is pretty good. You guys ready for this?
Please.
All right.
Sure.
The scene opens on a dimly lit, smoke-filled room. I know, it's always a dimly lit, smoke-filled room with David Lynch, but that's just the way it is. Donald Trump sits at a desk surrounded by piles of papers and empty fast food containers. He is speaking on the phone, his voice low and menacing. I don't care what it takes. I want that deal done by tomorrow or heads will roll. Do you understand me? He slams the phone down and turns to a shadowy figure standing in the corner of the room. They think they can push me around, but I'm the president. I'm in charge here. The figure steps forward, revealing himself to be a dark, twisted version of Trump's own face. The twisted Trump says, "You're not in charge. I am, and I'll do whatever it takes to maintain my power." Trump's face contorts in fear and confusion as the twisted version of himself continues to speak. Twisted Trump says, "You're just a pawn in my game, a tool to be used and discarded when I'm done with you." This is very Lynchian, by the way. Trump tries to speak, but no words come out. He looks around frantically as if searching for an escape, but the room seems to be closing in on him. Twisted Trump says, "You can never escape me. I am always here, inside your head, pulling the strings, and you will do my bidding, no matter what the cost." Trump lets out a scream as the screen fades to black. Fade to black and the end of the scene. And then there's a note at the end of this. Please note that this is a fictional scene, and it should not be taken as an actual representation of Donald Trump and his behavior. Now, I wonder what sparked the AI to do that, to add that little disclaimer. But boy, that's kind of brilliant, I think. You know, that's it gets the evil. It gets the Lynchian, like, you know, two worlds. Which one are you in? The doppelgangers and all that. So, yeah, that's something. That's something you can have a lot of fun with. But, wow. I'm going to be writing a lot tonight.
That's the most important thing, is having fun with it.
So. I just asked to write a sequel to Gone with the Wind. So it's busy doing that. While that's going, I'm going to give out the information. OTH at 2600.com is our email address. That's what it is. Yes, not our webpage. Every issue, not every, I'm getting all the words wrong. Every, because the computer's doing the words, I don't do words anymore. Every episode of our radio show, Off the Hook, is available online at 2600.com/offthehook. So feel free to listen to them all when you have a moment. We will be back next Wednesday, 7 p.m. on WBAI, and next Wednesday, 8 p.m. here on YouTube for Overtime.
Please support us and support community radio.
Oh, I have a surprising answer from the AI about my sequel to Gone with the Wind. I'm sorry, I am not able to write a sequel to a specific copyrighted book such as Gone with the Wind due to copyright laws. Wow, these AIs are going to play by the rules.
That's not out of copyright yet?
You know, I'm not sure. I don't know.
The movie. Is it a movie or a screenplay?
Additionally, creating a sequel to a beloved classic such as Gone with the Wind would require a deep understanding of the character's story and themes, and would be a difficult task for any author, let alone a computer program. Is there anything else I can help you with?
It's a long way around to say that the previous sequel to Gone with the Wind was not good.
I guess that's sort of a catty way of saying that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I'm going to ask it to tell me how to make an egg cream. I think that would be a win for tonight if I can get that out of it. So, okay, folks, we will. It's giving me that. Good. We'll be back next week. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Please write OTH at 2600.com. Any ideas, submissions, reactions. We want to hear it all.
Good and bad. All right. Good night, everybody.